Claudia, Marianne, and Stacy are back. Netflix has adapted the book series The Babysitter's Club. It hopes to reintroduce the series to young viewers, nostalgic millennials, and anyone else who longs for days spent with friends when worries aren't too worrisome. Starring a cast of fresh young actors and a few familiar faces among the adults, the show is getting solid reviews, and it might be just the thing for summer viewing. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about The Babysitter's Club on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. Welcome to banking reimagined. Capital One checking and savings accounts have no fees or minimums and a top-rated banking app that lets you manage your money anytime, anywhere. Check on the account balance, deposit checks, pay bills, and transfer money on the go. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back. You know, in honor of the Babysitter's Club, I'm here with a wonderful club of people. Joining us from her home in Tacoma Park, Maryland, is writer Katie Presley. Hi, Katie!
Howdy!
And with us from her home in Irvine, California, is writer Kate Young. Welcome back, Kate.
Hi.
So it's Katie, Kate, and Linda. We are the new Babysitter's Club.
The lines are open.
To orient anybody who's not super familiar with this series, Anne M. Martin wrote the first Babysitter's Club book in 1986. It became the basis for a series that ultimately had more than, no kidding, 200 books published up until 2000. They were wildly popular, more than 175 million copies in print. The Netflix adaptation is a 10-episode series. For the most part, each episode is from the perspective of a particular girl. Christy, played by Sophie Grace, is the bossy one who started the club. Claudia, who's played by Momona Tamada, is the cool one. Marianne, who's played by Malia Baker, is the shy one. And Stacy, who's played by Shea Rudolph, is the fancy one who has moved from Manhattan to the suburbs of Connecticut. They're also eventually joined by Dawn, who's played by Sochi Gomez. They all have stuff going on with families. Some of the parents are played by people you'll recognize. Alicia Silverstone is Christy's divorced mom. Mark Evan Jackson, one of our favorites, is Marianne's very protective dad. Rachel Schuchert, who's running this show and also worked on Glow and Supergirl, is clearly trying to keep the show very faithful to the feel of the books. I was not a major Babysitter's Club person because 86, I was slightly too old. So this missed me by a little bit, which is part of why I'm so happy to have Katie and Kate here. Katie, you were a Babysitter's Club person.
I'm going to say biggest question mark because I'm in front of a microphone and I get to say things like that and no one is going to yell at me. But yes, I would say two great ideas happened in 1986. Christie's great idea and the great idea of Katie Presley, who was born in 1986. So I'm ready.
And Christie's great idea is the title of the first book, and her idea is creating the Babysitter's Club. And I have to say, I have some questions about their business model, but we'll come back to that. What did you like about these books, Katie?
This is going to reveal my Marianne tendencies. One of the things I liked is that the first half of the book, of every book, which not even first half, the first probably two chapters, introduce what the book is going to be about, and then do a very formulaic rundown of every member of the BSC, which meant that you could read them really, really, really fast. So I was a kid who would have friends over and have reading contests to see who could finish a BSC book faster. But I also was a babysitter. I grew up in a very idyllic, could have been in Stony Brook, cul-de-sac where all of the kids were within 2 years of my age. I liked that the books were girl-centric. I liked that the issues that they faced blended big issues and little issues, big issues about divorce and family and death and grandparents and illness, but also boy craziness and which party to go to and like, oh, those darn Pike kids are so tricky to babysit for, which worked for a teenage girl, right? Like worked for someone growing up or preteen when I started reading them, because everything is sort of actually the same size when you're young, the big stuff and the little stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think the show also does a great job of capturing that. So that's what really drew me to it, is I felt like they were about girls like me who cared about stuff that I cared about.
And you feel like the show is capturing that same feeling?
Absolutely. One of the things I hope we talk about the most today is who we think the show is for, the grownups or the kids. I think both, and I think there's an argument to be made that they do both really, really well. But gosh, I would love to be 12 and watching this show and watching these smart, funny, industrious girls grow up in the world that they inhabit, which they managed to make look very warm and comfy.
Yeah. How about you, Kate? What is your Babysitter's Club backstory?
Well, I did not have reading contests, but I did spend quite a lot of time reading these books. I mean, I'm just discovering that they stopped publishing when I was 10. So it makes sense then that I spend a lot of my like 8 to about 11 reading these books before I moved on to like Sweet Valley High.
Right.
But I remember reading them and just feeling very attached to these characters. I think as a kid, I was always a voracious reader. Like I was the kid who got in trouble for reading when we were supposed to be paying attention. But I loved these books because they were, as Katie said, girl-centric, but they also gave them real problems and real responsibility. I think that's probably what imprinted on the most. They are dealing with issues that are real problems that adults still have to deal with regards to childcare. And I think it really impressed upon me that just because you're young doesn't mean that the things that you are doing in your life aren't important or don't have an impact on other people. And I really enjoyed the way that the show captures that. I think probably even better than I remember from the books. There's a lot of stuff happening that shows that they are finding their way in the world in a way that is interconnected to all of the other people in their lives. It's just fantastic, I think, at capturing that same essence from the book.
Yeah, and we should mention, you know, they have kept a lot of the aesthetic of the book. I have to say, there's a moment in the first episode toward the end when they're all sitting around in the bedroom. Christy grabs this red visor and puts it on. And the minute I saw that girl put that red visor on, my first thought was, that has to be a recreation of like important imagery from the books. So I went and looked, and sure enough, it's a recreation of the cover of the first book where she has a red visor. So I think they have definitely tried to be really true to the aesthetics of the books. But, you know, we mentioned a bunch of the casting in my little kind of intro. And they have tried to make, I think, this group of girls somewhat more inclusive. Marianne, who is white in the books, is biracial in the show and is being raised by her dad, who's the one played by Mark Evan Jackson. And then also Dawn, who's played by Xochi Gomez, is white in the books and is Latina in this show. So they have tried to make that, I think, somewhat more inclusive. I think there are still... It still is a particular kind of girl's story, but I do think they made some effort to kind of reflect a somewhat broader world, yeah?
Yeah, and I also like that one of the ways that they grappled with the fact that it is still a story of pretty privileged girls when the girls go to summer camp and Dawn foments a revolution when she realizes that some of the activities at camp cost extra and the camp is already expensive to send kids to. So she like starts a strike slash revolt to ensure that all kids have access to all activities. Again, I think the way that that is presented is very accessible to a 12 or 13 year old who sees that and thinks the stuff that they're protesting, maybe I haven't thought about it, but I am thinking about it now in the language of these 12 or 13 year old girls that are doing it. The 13 year olds are like leading, you know, maybe I can lead things I care about. It was gently handled, but I think effectively handled. And certainly nothing like that happened in the books that I can remember.
I really enjoyed that because they deal with some really difficult issues in this show in a way that doesn't feel heavy or despairing, but feels accessible for kids who might be, you know, industrious and curious in the same way to maybe do their own research or ask some questions so that they might learn more about bigger issues and maybe aren't touching their lives yet, but may eventually do so. And now they have an understanding of issues like trans identity or internment that allows them access to other people's experiences that they may not have had access to before. I was really pleased with Dawn in particular because, you know, she's the show's little proto-feminist. And I really enjoyed the way she managed to be the member of the group who was, I suppose, progressive is not quite the word. She's still only 12. But who was more open to different ideas that maybe were not necessarily things that were coming up for girls who are living in what is essentially a pretty white suburb. and aren't surrounded by a ton of diversity. But she's bringing in these issues as someone who is, you know, coming in from California. They make that point a ton and understands some of these things because they're not foreign to her in the same way that they are to the other girls. And I really appreciated the way that they used her both as a girl of color and also as someone who's slightly foreign to the immediate setting as a way to introduce new ideas to not just the audience, but also to these characters.
I do want to point people to a short documentary on Netflix that they've released that's called The Claudia Kishi Club, which is a group of Asian American kind of writers and people who talk about how important Claudia Kishi was to them as a role model growing up, despite also acknowledging that in the books, there are things about the portrayal of her since she is the one kind of girl of color in the original story. And so there's a recognition of both the positive and the negative of having had this kind of one element of representation, but how the love of that series has morphed into something where the need to see that representation is now being presented in kind of these interview subjects in the documentary in their own art. And so I really do recommend, if you're interested in this stuff, to look up that Claudia Kishi Club short documentary. It's only about, it's between 15, 20 minutes. It's a really clever, I think, companion to this. And I promised that I was going to talk about their business model. And I do just want to say they do such a clever job, I think, of on the one hand, incorporating like current, some like stuff about social media and texting and stuff like that. But they do try to retain a certain analog sensibility because it's what the club was. Right. Like they have their one landline phone, which is the transparent kind of see-through phone that everyone, that a lot of people had, where you could see the colorful works on the inside. But I do think, are parents now too jumpy about babysitting to accept, like, we'll send a different person every time? I looked at it and I was like, if I'm a parent, the fact that it's part of the model, and it's, look, hey, it's supposed to be a very employee-friendly, labor positive model that everyone rotates through and gets work and the parent doesn't get to pick their own sitter, very even-handed in that way, would parents really go for it?
I mean, I don't have kids, so I guess I can't really say whether or not I would trust my toddler to a 12-year-old. And what I think would make it work is, one, because they're younger, I think they're more likely to be trusted in the sense that there are a lot of the concerns around having strange people in your home kind of disappear when they're kids, mm-hmm, and they're less mm-hmm. likely to have to, you know, create damage.
Right.
And I think specifically with these characters, I think one of the things that comes up in the series is the fact that because they're young, they don't drive and they can't stay out late. And so they have to deal with the curfew issues when parents have to be out later. And that's something that will obviously continue to come up because they are still 12. But the way that the club is presented is that, for the most part, these girls are also part of this community in a real way. The people that are hiring them are people who have seen them grow up. And so they're also not dealing with strangers in the same way that you might if it was some big conglomerate. These are kids in their neighborhood. They're going to school with their own children. And so a lot of that, you know, perceived danger has kind of been eliminated. What is interesting to me, too, is the way that they don't necessarily directly talk about it, except in that one episode with Dawn. But the way that them as babysitters allow other parents, another woman in particular, to do the work outside the home that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do if they didn't have someone taking over that home and domestic labor. And I think that's part of what makes the show radical in a sense, because it really locates that work at home as important work that if it doesn't get done, really disrupts the rest of your life. And so they are providing an essential function.
Yeah, it's an interesting moment in history, I think, to have a show about essentially hero babysitters, because I think a lot of people are really, just like you say, Kate, really keenly aware of how important it is to have access to people who can help take care of kids in a way that's believable and trustworthy. So Kate has convinced me I am going to become an investor in the Babysitters Club. I still found it a very kind of diverting summer watch, the kind of thing that you mm-hmm. sort of need. It's a perfect kind of, I think, Netflix thing. There have been a couple of other adaptations, but I think this is a really super natural home for it. Heaven knows they can make, you know, once the world hopefully returns to an ability to make more television, I think they could make many, many more of these and probably will make a bunch more.
They've got 190 to choose from.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's so many books.
Honestly, the only obstacle that they might have in having the series run continuously is that the actresses are going to grow up.
Right.
Yeah, they'll either have to, I think, like cycle in different and new characters, which might be a positive thing, or it'll eventually have to be the College Babysitter's Club, which is a very different idea. But yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I think it's a good watch and I was happy, I have to say, to really have people have a chance to talk about this series, which is such an iconic and powerful piece of culture for so many people. And I think because the adaptations in the past haven't been super successful, to have the books have another opportunity to really be pushed to the foreground with a lot of women directing and writing on this series in addition to acting. Loved it a lot. Well, let us know what you think of Babysitter's Club. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thank you so much for being here, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, please subscribe to our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here on Friday when we will be talking about the movie First Cow.
From Miss Am to Becky to Karen, our very own Karen.
Not that Karen.
Karen Grigsby Bates shares the evolution of the nickname for a certain kind of white woman.
I'm looking forward to the next iteration. I want my name back.
That's coming up on NPR's Code Switch.